Thanks for listening to the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio.
What up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. So much stuff to get to today. A reminder, the Doug Gottlieb Show is proudly brought to you by the great folks at Farmers. At Farmers, we've seen almost everything, so we know how to cover almost anything. When it's game time, have an experienced player to help you stay ahead of the game. Put their experience into play at Farmers.com.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
What's this weekend about? What do you think this weekend's about? Doug, it's about football. Like, yeah, it's about who will play for the AFC and NFC championship. Technically correct. I think it's about, will history repeat itself, right? Like, our thoughts about teams become embedded, one, in terms of recent history, but also over time. And if you look at all of these matchups, all of them, there is some sort of historical implication. There's some sort of historical reference where you can go, yeah, like, I've seen this before. I know exactly how it ends. Right? Like, in the 80s, if there was an action movie, they almost always ended the same. Right? Millions or hundreds of thousands of bullets flying, and yet somehow the hero made it through. And it's what made surprise endings. Like, wow, I didn't see that happening. One of my favorite movies is the movie Fallen. Do you remember the movie Fallen? No, Ramos? Ramos, you're a cinephile. You don't remember?
Yes. Michael Douglas.
Right? Fallen? No. Fallen was Denzel Washington, oh. John Goodman, Donald Sutherland.
John Lithgow.
Was Lithgow in it?
Yeah, he's like, he takes over bodies, right? Doesn't he take over bodies of people?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, although I don't think Lithgow was in it, dude. There's like an evil spirit, right? Basically like the devil gets passed from body to body. You know the movie. You got the actors a little screwed up. Don't worry. Ramos's entire equilibrium is thrown off. His wife's pregnant with their third, and he's trying to figure out how to do it.
Right? That's a good point.
How'd I do it? When I'm saying not the Immaculate Conception, but like, look at John. I mean, he doesn't look like a guy that's still, but Johnny's still got it in him. Anyway, one of my favorite parts of the movie Fallen is that there's a surprise ending where good doesn't necessarily reign supreme, right? Or the movie Seven. Movie Seven. What's in the box? What's in the box? Right? But it's because so many times good wins out in movies. Because history tells us, you know, end of the day, how many times are you going to see Rocky? Hey, I don't know. Rocco pulls this one out, right? It's what makes Empire Strikes Back such a great movie. Because here is a franchise movie where good doesn't win at the end of the movie. And if I'm spoiling Empire Strikes Back for you, you've been stuck under a rock for 35 years. And that's where we are this weekend. This isn't good versus evil. It's the Patriots are at home in the playoffs against the Chargers, right? Come on, man. Like, you ask anybody on the street, they'll be like, well, the Patriots are going to win that game. Why? Because I got 17 years of data, 18 years of data that tell me what's going to happen in this game. No matter how much I think of Phillip Rivers and how tough he is, he's played this game in the AFC Championship before. Granted, LaDainian Tomlinson didn't play because of a knee injury. I've seen the Patriots play the Chargers when Terrence Keel got an interception at Qualcomm And instead of staying down, he tried to run it, and he fumbled. And a 14-2 Charger team lost at home to the Patriots. I've seen it before. I know how it ends. The Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm done a complete 180 from picking the game on Cowherd yesterday. I think the Kansas City Chiefs just have way too many dudes, way too much talent. And they've lost second half leads in the playoffs, even last year to Tennessee, previously to the Colts. I feel like they're going to run it up on the Colts. But I've seen this before, and it's history. I've seen an Andrew Luck-led Indianapolis Colts team that wasn't as good as the Kansas City Chiefs beat the Kansas City Chiefs after trailing by, what, they trailed by 31 points? I've seen it. I know how it ends. Not always ends. Heck, I saw the Rams last year lose to a team that matched up well with Todd Gurley, that took away Todd Gurley. I've seen it. I've seen the Saints beat the Eagles this year. I've seen the Saints be nearly unbeatable at home for years, even with crummy teams. Of course, when they go to the Super Bowl, they're awesome at home. And so I guess the question heading into this weekend is, will history repeat itself? Right? Brady, Belichick, at home, playoffs, it's a wrap. Cold weather. They're so good that we assume they have to have cheated. Right? Like, one of the things that Spygate, Deflategate play into is, there's no way anybody could be this good this long. When the truth is, they've been this good this long. And you may say to yourself, Gottlieb, you're blind to it. I'm not a Patriot fan. I'm really not. Not close. I also realized that the whole Spygate thing was simply, look, for 50 years, you've had assistants up in the booth or on the sideline trying to read the signs and make the correlating, what's the correlating offense, correlating defense, right? That's why they have signs. That's why they don't hold up a sign that says what they're going to do. You got to, people have been trying to steal signs for years. All they're ever accused of doing is filming instead of doing it with their eyes. Genius. And the Deflategate thing. Like, what does that come from? It comes from the week before they played the Baltimore Ravens and used some formations that confused the Baltimore Ravens. And then Tom Brady's like, hey, maybe you should read the rule book. And if you remember, the Colts were coached by Chuck Pagano, a former Raven assistant who just happens to go to the league and happens to mention, hey, something, check out the footballs. Like, here's how there's nothing to the Deflategate thing. It's a joke. Do you remember this? Remember the NFL was going to do a year-long investigation on the inflation rate of the footballs and the deflation rate over the games? Hey, you noticed that there's never been an announcement of the findings in that? Because they didn't find nothing, because they probably did nothing wrong. They're so good. This is like, I told this to my wife, and I think I said this on air 2 days ago. My mother-in-law once asked my wife if I was doing steroids. I was like, that's the greatest compliment anybody has ever given me. She's like, what do you mean? I was like, well, if you think that in order to get big, I had to cheat, then that means I must be looking pretty big. If the Patriots to be this good had to cheat and they didn't cheat, that must be they're pretty good. So I am fascinated by this weekend. Fascinated. Because we do study history. Because if you don't study it, you're deemed to repeat it. But history does have a tendency of repeating itself. That's why we use the expression, history repeats itself. Isn't it? Like, Napoleon attacked Europe and Russia. And when they attacked Russia, he was in the winter. Never fight a war on two fronts. And Napoleon was little. And you know what? Hitler did the exact same thing. History repeats itself. The Patriots look outmatched, outmanned. Tom Brady looks old. They don't have the talent at wide receiver. Rob Gronkowski can't run anymore. But somehow they'll find a way into that damn Super Bowl. annoying the hell out of everybody outside of New England, right? I'm sure at some point it comes to an end. Until it does, I'm left with the old cliche, history repeats itself. I think Kansas City is far more talented than the Colts. I don't think the Colts have actually beaten anybody who's any good. I don't think the Texans are any good. I don't. Nobody actually thinks the Texans are all that good. They have some good players, but great players does not make a great team make. The most talented teams in the AFC are the Chiefs, are the Chargers, are the Patriots, are the Steelers, are even the Ravens. Tell me who of those teams the Colts have beaten. Like, I don't think it's close. Whereas the Chiefs, and granted they haven't beaten them all, but we saw the shootout with the Rams. We've seen them split with the Chargers. Had a huge lead. We saw them lose to the Patriots. We've seen them play the Steelers. Like, I think we're judging their records and even their stats against completely different levels of competition. But trying to rid yourself of history, especially when it's recent history, is really hard. And that's the challenge for the Rams. That's the challenge for the Chargers. That's the challenge for the Chiefs. And that's the challenge for the Eagles. Heck, Eagles are trying to repeat as champions. Nobody repeats as champions. That's why branding really is important, because it means you're establishing a positive reputation, and reputations are built over time and consistent success. And once you get it, it's hard to shake. Will history repeat itself, as the cliche says? It's going to be a fascinating weekend. That's what this weekend to me is about. Yeah, we're going to decide who plays the AFC Championship. Yeah, we'll find out, like, if the Chargers can win in Pittsburgh, in Kansas City, in Baltimore, and in New England, like, tell me there's a better run in football. I don't know of it. In Seattle, think of the place they've won. Okay, they won in Kansas City, they won in Pittsburgh, they won in Baltimore, they won in Seattle. That's unbelievable. That's remarkable. Right, Foxborough is like the last mountain to climb. It may be the highest mountain. It actually might not be that high a mountain. It might be one of like, man, that Foxborough, that's a tough mountain. And then you get it like, you know, this is not that tough a mountain. I'll tell you what New England is. Can I give you a quick, this is a quick geography lesson? Really quick. John Middlecoff's going to join us in a second. This is a really good one, so I want you to remember that. Do you know what the highest peak on the eastern seaboard is? Anybody? You want to take a guess? Ramos? Music? Byer? Okay. Byer, you want to take a guess?
What was the question?
What's the highest peak on the eastern seaboard?
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
Wait, what's the highest peak in the United States?
Is it Mount McKinley?
It's Mount Whitney, isn't it?
I believe, hold on, the highest summit in the world is Mount Everest, right? The highest peak is, in the contiguous United States, right, is, I think, Mount Whitney, right? Mount Whitney in the Sierra Nevadas. It's at 14,500 feet. All the rest, I believe, are in Alaska. Like, Denali is in Alaska. That's at 20,000 feet. So, when I tell you that the highest peak in New England is Mount Washington, how high do you think it is?
8,000.
Huh?
8,000 feet?
It's like 6,500.
Okay.
So, you think 6,500 feet, piece of cake. And you can. You can hike it. You go in the summer, you can hike it. And it's really fascinating. You can actually drive up. There's a trail where you drive up it, and there's five different, like, I don't know what it's called, environments or whatever, right? Where you get to the top and it's like tundra, like frozen tundra. But it's also the coldest and windiest spot in the United States. Which, why isn't Mount Whitney colder and windier, right? It's because you got everything coming down from Canada, and like, this is like this peak that basically is the one peak in between all these winds coming off of Canada and the Atlantic Ocean. So it's about not just topography, but location-wise, that at 6,500 feet, which looks like, I can walk that today. And you can in the summer. You can walk right up it. No problem. White Mountains of New Hampshire. But when you get to the top, you're like, damn, this is really hard, cold, challenging, freezing. It gets to minus 70 degrees. They've clocked winds there at over 200 miles an hour. There's a building at the top. It's actually chained to the mountain. That's what the Patriots are like. It doesn't look like much. Tom Brady's in his 40s. Rob Gronkowski can't run. There are no real special playmakers on defense, on the defensive front. But you got to go into New England. The weather's going to be bad. Something happens with the headsets. The footballs might be inflated, might be deflated. They might have your signals. I don't know.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Fix the quarterback, fix your team. That's why all these McVay clones are getting hired. But there are some that believe, many people in the media believe, and a lot of fans, that it delegitimizes Sean McVay if they don't win a playoff game this year. Is that fair? Is that a fair statement? Again, I don't know. I don't believe it's actually fair or right or accurate at all, because the league speaks. And even though the league is a copycat league and we've reached this kind of point of almost embarrassment, where if you bump shoulders with Sean McVay at any point in time, you somehow become a possible head coaching candidate. But is that fair? Yeah. I think that's what people think. People think that Sean McVay has to win this weekend against the Cowboys, or it's not legitimate what he's done, the perception. John Ramos, you are a Rams fan, legit, old school LA Rams fan. How were the Rams before Sean McVay took over?
Putrid.
Okay. What level of putridity were they?
You're talking about the year in LA and what the year before that in St. Louis, correct? When Jeff Fisher was...
The year before, they were 7-9. Okay, but here's what he inherited. Okay? People say he inherited 4-12, and he did. And they were the laughing stock of the league, and people thought Jared Goff couldn't play, and suddenly Jared Goff became a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, right? But think about this. Since 2004 up until last year, that's 13 years of football, they had not been above 500, not one time. The last 2 years, they have won a combined 24 games. That's an average of 12 wins. Last year they won 11. This year they won 13. Is that improvement?
Yes.
When you win two more games, that's better than the year before, after winning seven more games the year before that. What are we doing here? Look, do I think that it's ridiculous that, like, well, like the Arizona Cardinals, their PR department, I don't think it's the Arizona Cardinals and their general manager really believing this, but their PR department did say that, you know, Cliff Kingsbury is friends with Sean McVay and was going to work with him and observe before he got the USC head coaching job. Like, somehow that legitimizes them. But this is a real thing. Okay? There's a trend in the NFL for how do I get another McVay? Now, one of the things we've done a bad job in the media, and football guys have done a bad job of, you think that the only thing he does there is work with a quarterback and call plays. That's because you're not actually paying attention. How's McVay in the press conference? Phenomenal. And you're like, what does that matter? Look, when you're in Los Angeles and you're the youngest head coach in the history of the league, people are going to pay attention. You better handle yourself well. Has he? He's done better than anyone maybe else in the league. When you bring in huge egos like Aqib Talib and Dominick Sue, Marcus Peters, you better say the right things and be able to motivate those guys to play. And he's done so. Like, McVay's the whole package. He has enough ego and swag to take over a locker room, but enough intelligence to know I got to hire a big-time old-school defensive coordinator in Wade Phillips and let him do his thing. Right? Like, the idea that McVay just sits in his office and has a sippy cup because he's so young and draws up plays and only talks with Jared Goff is completely and utterly uneducated. The reason the league is looking for the next McVay is he's young and the whole package. And that's what they want to copy. And so if you think they have to win a football game for it to legitimize what he's done to the Rams, that's a laughable take. Laughable. He came into a program that hadn't had a winning season in 13 years. Matter of fact, in 14 years, because they actually went to the playoffs at 8-8 going back to 2004. Mike Martz's last full season, they went 8-8 and made the playoffs. So it had been since 2003 that they had a winning season, and they won 11 games. In a division with Bruce Arians, in a division with Pete Carroll. Right? So it ain't like he walked in and everybody else was awful. Granted, Seattle was a bit of a dumpster fire last year, but they whooped their ass, but they were still a viable football team with Russell Wilson. And Bruce Arians, as much as that thing had fallen apart, they did win 8 games, and Bruce Arians is a big-time coach. You're talking about a Super Bowl-winning franchise in the Seahawks, and the Cardinals had been to a Super Bowl and had Larry Fitzgerald. David Johnson got hurt last year. I'm not going through. Like, look, he walked into a decent division with a team that hadn't won in over a decade and immediately changed the franchise. And then this year, they're better. They didn't level off. They didn't win the same amount of games. They played a first play schedule, and they're better. Better. And like, look, we can say they haven't played well at the end of the year, but who are the good teams that are still playing? Are the Chargers a good team? How the Rams do against them? Are the Chiefs a good team? How the Rams do against them? Like, what are we doing? Like, we do this. I understand. People are enamored by Sean McVay because he's awesome. That's why. I think some of the Sean McVay stuff also is people don't think Jared Goff's also that good. They're like, man, if you can do all that stuff with Jared Goff, what could he do with an awesome quarterback? But I've seen this all throughout the media where you're like, man, McVay's really got to win a game to somehow legitimize himself. Like, he does? They won 13 games this year.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at noon Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
Three-time Super Bowl champion with the Redskins and with the Denver Broncos. And I want to get to this stink, which just came down, is that Gary Kubiak will not be the offensive coordinator of the Denver Broncos. Philosophical differences is what Adam Schefter is reporting. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it just leads me to believe, first off, hey, Happy New Year. It's great to be back on your program. But it leads me to believe, Doug, that Gary couldn't hire some of the people he wanted to hire. And, you know, the rumor around here in Denver, and I live in Denver, was part of Gary retiring as the Broncos head coach, a lot of it had to do with the health. That was the majority of it. But also that John Elway and he differed on opinions on some of Gary's staff and some of his long-term guys. And Gary's a very loyal guy. And so my initial reaction to this is that Gary wanted to bring along Rick Dennison, who's one of his closest friends, and Brian Perriani. Rick Dennison's been a longtime offensive line coach / offensive coordinator. Brian Perriani, a longtime tight ends coach. They have been with Gary everywhere he's gone, from, you know, his days here in Denver to being the head coach of the Houston Texans to being the offensive coordinator with the Baltimore Ravens. And I'm sure that was part of what Gary wanted. At least I speculate that's part of what Gary wanted. And when John said, absolutely not, then Gary said, you know what, pound sand. There seems to be a little bit of drama here in Denver.
Does seem to be. So who gets the job then?
That, you know, that your guess is as good as mine now, because now they're going to have to go back into, you know, do they go back into some of the people they've been contacting? You know, is it the offensive coordinator or quarterback's coach or whatever he is from the Rams, the tight ends coach from the Rams? You know, are you going to go in that direction? The issue there is, Doug, and it's funny, you know, I spoke to two general managers yesterday. And, you know, all this, hey, let's get somebody who's touched McVay. I just want somebody who's got some McVay on him, you know, somebody that's young, somebody that's an innovator. You know, I call games every week for Fox. I watch, you know, 50 hours of film a week. And, you know, it's funny. One of the GMs told me, hey, listen, I was talking to my head coach about this very same thing. He says, listen, we all have the same program. Every team uses it. I use it. I can put in any formation I want, any personnel grouping I want. I can do anything. And I'll get, hey, week 13, give me 3-by-1 formations. And I'll get all 32 teams 3-by-1s that week. And so I can go through what used to take days to kind of figure out and collate. Now you do in hours. And so everybody copies the same stuff. It's the same crap. And you get in a 3-by-1 formation, everybody runs all go special. Everybody, every single person, everybody runs curl flat combinations. Everybody runs slant flat combinations. Everyone runs double slants. And, you know, I mean, it's the same stuff. Everybody runs somebody down the seam and runs a dig behind it. You know, it's not like it's unique. It's not like there's new things being produced. It really is. Can you, the innovators have great play action off of their run game that matches up to their run game that creates, you know, creates confusion, creates slow play on defense, creates hesitation on the defensive side of the ball. But it's not like you're reinventing football. I'm telling you what, every team, and I see it every week, runs the exact same crap. It really comes down to how well does your play action tie up to your running game, and how good is your coach in-game making adjustments. Hey, man, this is the defense we get in a 3-by-1 or a 2-by-2 formation, and this is what they're playing. So we're going to give them the same thing we gave them in the first quarter, but now you know what we're going to do. We're going to readjust this inside receiver's route, and he's going to run, you know, he's going to run a stick seam, and we're going to get them on this because they're biting on that. That's really where the innovation comes into. Can you create 4 or 5 different looks out of one setting, one motion? All looks the same, but it's all different. That's innovation, but everybody runs the same crap. So yeah, I think it's just, I think, again, it's the NFL going, oh, Sean McVay came in and got, you know, 11 first rounders and a bunch of second rounders. The team, the talent level was extreme. And I'm not saying Sean McVay isn't great, because he is one of the most dynamic people I've ever met. But the bottom line is, you know, you can either communicate or you can't. It doesn't matter if you're 32 or if you're 72. Wade Phillips proves it every day. So, you know, I think the NFL gets enamored with one guy and says, oh, my God, that's the key. And that's never the key. You know, you just got to be a great coach and understand people, how to relate and how to develop relationships and how to communicate.
That's the voice of Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champion, Fox NFL analyst, joining us. Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. All right, so what's the one hire that you think is the best hire?
You know, I mean, I'm as like anybody else out there that's a fan. I mean, I have no clue. I like the fact that Vic Fangio gets a chance in Denver. I like the fact that you talk to any player that's played for the guy, you talk to any coach who's coached with the guy. He is all football. He's no nonsense. He communicates and he gets a lot out of his players. You know, I think that's great. But the bottom line is, I don't know. I really like Freddie Kitchens. I did a game in Cleveland. I ended up speaking and spending some time with Freddie Kitchens. I really liked his philosophical approach. I liked his honesty. I liked what I saw in practice, his development and his relationship with Baker Mayfield and his trust that he put in him. So I really liked the Freddie Kitchens hire as well. But again, you know, you don't ever know until you know. I mean, there's a lot of guys that have a great resume. Like Norv Turner had a great resume. Great resume. I played for him for his first year in Washington when he became the coach, and he really struggled. You know, I think identity is important. And one problem that you get into when you come from like a Bill Belichick tree or somebody else's tree, sometimes what you end up doing is you end up trying to mimic that guy. And players, more than anything, players can read whether you're authentic or not. Players understand when you start saying, hey, this is the New England way, and we're going to implement this, and this is the way that Belichick did it, they all look at you like, oh, well, you're nothing but a clown. And so it's just being authentic, being real, and being your own man. And players respect that. And I think that's just one of those things. We're going to have to wait and see exactly, you know, who has success and who doesn't.
That's the voice of Mark Schlereth. He's joining us on the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Let's get to this weekend. You mentioned Sean McVay. They've had issues in their offensive line. Gurley hasn't been healthy either. And they're playing against a dynamic, fast Cowboys defense. How do you think the Rams play?
Yeah, you know, interestingly enough, here's the thing. Unlike some offensive football teams, the Rams really base, and I've sat with Sean McVay three different times now as I've called three of their games, they base out of really a wide zone system. So they're mostly in three wides. About 97% of the time, they line up in three wides. The only time they're not in three wides is if they get the goal line, which isn't very often, and if they're kneeling at the end of a game. So 97% of the time, they're in the same basic, you know, personnel grouping. But they base everything on kind of nickel 19 handoff, nickel 19, nickel 18 handoff. So it's a wide zone concept. Gurley presses the front side, finds a backside seam, and cuts back into it. And that's really what they base on. Then all their play action, everything falls off of that. See, playing the offensive side of the ball, it's really about rhythm. And I think it's much easier for a team that predicates itself on running the football to get into a rhythm after a week off much faster than it is for a team that's really mostly about throwing it first and then running it second. So I still think they cured some of their woes. You know, they struggled up front when Gurley was injured. They had lost Brown earlier in the season to backup. C.J. Anderson has come in there in the last couple of weeks and done a phenomenal job of getting them back on track. I think they'll get back to their formula. I think it's going to be a real hard-fought, real tight game. But here's the deal. When you watch them on the defensive side of the ball, they're giving up 5 yards a carry. And the way they're playing it is, hey, listen, we're so good offensively. We get ahead of teams. If we get 7 points up on you, it feels like you're down by 14. You start throwing the ball. We unleash all the first-rounders we have. Brockers is a first-rounder. Dominican Sue's a first-rounder. Aaron Donald's a first-rounder. Flowers is a first-rounder. Like, we're going to kill your quarterback. And we're going to create turnovers. So we'll give up the yards rushing. You know, we'll give up the 5 yards of carry. If you can run it 12 straight times and put it in the end zone, we'll tip our hats. But we think that what we'll do is we'll get a lead on you, and then we'll unleash, you know, pin the ears back of Aaron Donald, let him come after you. And I think that's, you know, I think that's their philosophical approach to playing. And, you know, obviously if they can score points and if they rectify some of the issues they've had on offense, they're going to win this game, I think.
The New England Patriots are, you know, look, they're just a good football team. Right, they stop the run. They run the football well. They got a very good quarterback. Gronk's not the runner he used to be, but he's a very good blocker for a guy who's a great pass catching tight end. And they're playing at home. They got a lot of confidence. This is kind of what they do. It seems like, at least on paper, Chargers have more talent and they have a Hall of Fame quarterback. But can the Chargers overcome all of that history and the confidence of New England and win yet another road game?
Yeah, you know, I think the Chargers have played just as well, if not better, on the road than they have in that soccer stadium that they call home. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is I do think they're a more talented football team. I think they have a very undervalued receiving core. I think Keenan Allen's one of the better receivers in the league, and he really sets a tone. He's a difference maker, a tone setter at the receiver position. You know, if you go back to, I think it was a year ago, and all the film that I watched kind of blends together, but I think it was last year. If memory serves, New England beat the Chargers. I think it was in Los Angeles, and I think they beat them 21-13. But Gus Bradley, their defense coordinator, loves to run, you know, the basic Seattle defense, which is a matchup cover three. And one of the weaknesses of that defense is the running backs in the flat, because if you run your receiver off deep in a cover three, the corner has to go. That means your curl flat defender has to try to get 12 yards of depth, and then if you dump it to your running back, he's got to come up and make a tackle. And the running backs for New England in that particular game that they won 21-13, it was 14 receptions for like 160-some-odd yards just from the running back position. They have to rectify that. They have to cure that. Otherwise, Brady will pick them apart. But I think the Chargers are a better football team all the way around. And I think I'm calling for the upset. I'm calling for the Chargers to go to New England and win.
Fascinating stuff. All right, what about the Chiefs and the Colts? The Colts have gotten a lot of mileage out of a young defense and Andrew Luck, but they haven't beaten really elite teams in the NFL, and this is an elite offense. What are your thoughts about the ability for the Colts to go on the road and get a win?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, you look at the Chiefs, 1-11 in their last 12 playoff games, 0-6 at home in the playoffs in their last six. So, you know, you look at the Chiefs, man, they have struggled this time of year. They're a pretty one-dimensional football team. The Colts, you talked about that young defense, man, a lot of just base cover two, meaning you're not going to get the big plays over the top of that defense. They're going to be very stingy that way. You're going to have to pick them apart underneath. Of course, Mahomes has the ability to do that. There's no question. I will tell you this, though. You look at Wild Card Weekend. It was fascinating to me. Anybody, any team that physically whipped the ass of the other team up front, both offensive line and defensive line, won each matchup. You control the line of scrimmage, you win. The Colts on offense with their offensive line and Quentin Nelson and what they've done up front, man, they can actually set the tone. They can beat you up front. They are so good. And I think this is, you know, I think Andrew Luck obviously is playing great football. This is a fascinating matchup to me. I actually like the Colts to go on the road and make this close, maybe even win this one.
All right, what about the Eagles? Got Foles magic going into the Superdome, where the Saints, they're built to play at home. And look, it was a different quarterback. Eagles weren't healthy at all, but they did whip the Eagles earlier this year. What do you think of that matchup?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting matchup to me, too, because, you know, you look at the Eagles offense, and yeah, Nick Foles has done such a great job of kind of managing that offense. Also, you know, involving the wide receivers and Alshon Jeffrey more than Carson Wentz ever did. So that's been a real plus for them as a football team. And you know, they've got an elite offensive line when they're healthy. Jason Peters is a first ballot Hall of Famer, one of the best I've ever seen play. Lane Johnson's a great player. Kelsey at the center position is a great player. They're really outstanding there. I think their defense is going to be challenged with what New Orleans does, with the receiving core that they have, with Drew Brees and his ability to push the ball down the field. It's a fascinating matchup, but I'm going to take the Saints. I'm going to take the Saints to end that Nick Foles magic this weekend.
Yeah, I agree with you. The one I'm cautious of is that the Patriots thing. I'm with you. I think the Chargers are a better football team. They've won everywhere, but this is this completely different type of mountain to climb. Going to be fascinating. Great stuff, Stink. Enjoy the football. We always love your analysis. Regardless of the team, you give us the good stuff. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, man. Take care, buddy.
All right, this is Mark Schlereth, 3-time Super Bowl champion.